Whether it's audiobooks or all-time greatest hits, long live listening to your favorites. Learn more about Kisqali Ribociclib 200 milligrams at KISQALI.com and talk to your doctor to see if Kisqali is right for you.
Duffel bags from Jesse Brown's are great for people packing up to go somewhere, but also for those that are staying close to home. How's that? Sizes from 40, 55, 70, and 100 liters from makers like Patagonia are all on hand at Jesse Brown's. Check us out at jessebrowns.com for that duffel, the black hole duffel, whether it be going on an airplane or being a modern-day footlocker for students, campers, and dorm rooms. Pick a size and color, all at jessebrowns.com. Saddle up, everyone. The Carolina Outdoors is now in session. Your host right here, Bill Barty. TJ the DJ's pushing the buttons. We're going to go to Algonquin Park, Canada, to talk a little bit about canoeing, a little bit about wildlife, a little bit about the night sky. Then we're going to head to Mooresville, Kerrigan Farms. Doug Kerrigan's going to jump on the program and listen in because we're going to find out about this gem, the quarry, right outside of Charlotte. Are you going for a walk, a hike, a travel trip? Make sure that you have the right shoes, sandals, and boots for the trip, and make sure that they fit. Jesse Brown's has an expert team of footwear fitters that will help make your endeavor feel better from the bottom of your feet and up. Placement in the right category and the right size keep you looking and feeling good, Mortimer, in the right shoes. Stop by jessebrowns.com or the brick and mortar in the shopping district of Charlotte South Park area to get your newest, most favorite adventure footwear from Jesse Brown's. Hey, what do you think about some natural lakes? Maybe a little bit lower humidity during the summertime, or actually anytime, lower temperatures for sure, compared to the Carolinas. We're going to go to Canada, of course. Welcome, everyone, to the Carolina Outdoors. Many of you do not know. I try to put it in each segment or so, but early on Saturday mornings, WBT Radio does blast up and down the eastern seaboard. That's right, Canada to Cuba, Miami to Maine. But that Canada to Cuba parts, we're going to kind of hone in on. We're going to head up to Canada a little bit and talk about a vast interior of Maple Hills, Rocky Ridges, and thousands of lake. This is in the Algonquin region, and that's where we're going to go right now because Randy Mitson has been in that area for decades. He's also been a natural lake addict, and one of the most beautiful escapes in the world is out his back door. We're going to learn about it right now. Randy Mitson, welcome to the Carolina Outdoors.
Hey, thanks for having me. It's great to be here.
Randy, this is kind of our annual escape, if you will, here in the Carolinas to kind of head your way and let you paint that picture of the cooler reaches of Canada and the provincial park right there. For our listeners who may not know anything about Algonquin Provincial Park, will you talk to us about its just generally its layout of those of that setting?
Yeah, most definitely. So Algonquin Park is located in central Ontario. It's about 2.5 hours north of Toronto. So once you get across the border, you've got a few hours to still drive north. And it's a wilderness zone. So, you know, it's trees and lakes and rivers and hills. As you said, lots of rocky outcrops and that too, and lots of wildlife. There's not really any towns or villages or cities or anything there. And there's really only one big road that kind of goes through the lower part of it. It's a great escape from everyday life and just to disconnect and enjoy the wilderness. Yeah, it's pretty cool.
Now, during your time there at Algonquin Park, I guess, and correct me if I get any of this wrong, but one of its most famous pursuits is canoe trips. Talk to us about what types of canoe trips are happening, because many people listening to the program may think about paddling around in a still lake for just a little bit, and that is there at Algonquin Park, but there are also day trips and also multi-day trips that people are doing there. Will you kind of give us a schematic of that diversity of trips and things to do with a canoe at Algonquin?
Well, and that's really great because it really is a diverse scenario as to what type of trips that you can do. You know, there's lots of opportunities where you can just go out on the water for a little bit and enjoy it. There's lots of opportunities to paddle, you know, a calm lake, a little bay, maybe down a little river in that. But the real beauty of the park is to get into what we call the interior of it. By that, you're paddling, you know, most likely across a lake, and then you're portaging from one lake to the next. So you pick up the canoe with all your gear, you put it on your shoulders, and you hike basically with the canoe over a little portage to get to the next lake. The nice thing with that is it tends to leave a lot of the people behind. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of people that will do short portages, or they'll only do like one or two portages. But the more of those portages that you put behind you, the more you really get into the backcountry of the park and get away from the people and experience the real nature of Algonquin.
Also, a reminder for our listeners is there are no big houses on these lakes. There's no motorboats or water skiers or jet skiers. It is all human powered. At least, Randy, from what I know, and I have spent a little bit of time there, is it's all human powered paddling?
Yeah. Once you get into the backcountry, you're really not going to see motorboats or people water. You're not allowed to water ski in the park in the first place. But yeah, it's all going to be human powered. You may come across the occasional kayaker. But it's really a canoeing environment for it. Where the Highway 60 goes through the lower part of the park, there's a section that kind of sticks out the bottom that we call the panhandle because it literally looks like the handle of a frying pan. Mm-hmm. The road just goes through that part there. So it only goes through a small part of the park. And that section does have some touristy stuff. So there are car campgrounds, there are stores, there's a couple of restaurants, there's a couple of lodges. And you will see that there's a couple of cabins and stuff like that on those lakes that are really close to the road. And there are some lakes, some of the bigger ones, that just for safety reasons, they allow motorboats to be able to go out and help people if they have to. Or you can hire what we call a water taxi to shuttle you across the big lake. But once you get off those lakes that are right next to the highway, you know, there is no motorboats. It's all human powered. It's all just the brilliant silence of wilderness.
Oh, you had me at silence. Randy Mitson is the voice you hear there. He's our buddy from Ontario, Canada, coming on to talk about Algonquin Provincial Park. And Randy, when you're saying all of that, it can be intimidating, the variety of trips that are available to take on these multitude of lakes. There's several outfitters that will help you plan your trip as well in regards to water taxis, reservations, but also working on the logistics of food, of gear, rental gear, guides. All of that, for people that may be intimidated by a big international trip, which is what this would be to Algonquin Park, give us a lay of the land on how to kind of handle that. Should we call? Should we get on one of the outfitters? Like AlgonquinOutfitters.com is one of those. And then maybe call someone to help plan out what we, maybe a family, a small group, a buddy group, what kind of trip we should plan for, whether it be a one day, 3 day, or a week long?
Yeah, I really do suggest that you reach out to locals.
Yeah,
you know, wherever I travel, you know, even if I'm going to a populated place, I try to connect with local people there so that I get the lay of the land from the local point of view. And that's really important when you're going into a wilderness area, because there is no, you know, there is no call for help kind of thing if you run into a problem. So most of the outfitters will provide a guided trip for it. And if you've never done a canoe trip before, I would definitely recommend that you hire a guide to make sure that you stay safe and you have the best enjoyment possible. And those guides can do a number of things. They can just help you get started. So they can show you how to paddle a canoe and set up your tent and start a little campfire and that, so you can cook your meals. Or they can go with you and basically do everything for you. I've gone on trips as a guide myself in the past where, you know, I'm really only with the client for a day just to show them how to do things from daybreak to going to bed at their tent at night. And then they just repeat that after that. Mm-hmm. And I've been on trips where, you know, they want a guide that's more of a Sherpa to carry the canoes for them and that. So I did a trip with, I think it was 5 or 6 women once, and they really just wanted to have a good time and not do any of the work, which is okay because I knew ahead of time that that's what I was getting myself into. So I carried all the canoes, 3 canoes over every portage, and I carried all the packs, and I set up the camp every night, and I cooked all the meals and washed all the dishes and rolled down their sleeping bags for them.
You left out carrying those wine bottles. Randy, you left out carrying all the wine bottles.
Well, there's no bottles allowed in the park. You can bring Tetra packs and plastic containers and that. So no glass or tin because we want to make sure that nobody breaks anything and gets cut while they're on a trip.
Many times when we say natural lakes, people don't necessarily have the concept, but many of our listeners are from, you know, the New York region. There's a great stretch of natural lakes as well as over in Minnesota, the Boundary Waters, if you will, outside of Ely, Minnesota, and in that area. That's kind of what Algonquin Provincial Park or Algonquin Park is like, except as Randy said, it's just north of Toronto. Randy, give us a breakdown of the seasons. I know summertime is a busy time there on the area lakes, but talk to us, and we're respectfully on your time, get into some of the wildlife, but tell us what spring brings, summer brings, and then fall and winter bring for visitors to Algonquin.
Yeah, I'll just say first that summer is definitely a popular time. Mm-hmm. You definitely want to be planning things well in advance. And if you're, you know, hiring a guide or renting a canoe or anything like that, you definitely want to book that well in advance. You know, everybody has the great plan to come on a long weekend. So, and there's yes, just not enough opportunity to take care of everybody. So I usually suggest staying away from the long weekends. It will be less busy. You'll see less people. If you want to come in the summertime, try to book a midweek trip. So if you're coming for 3 days, book like Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, or Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. Fall is my favorite time. You know, as soon as the kids go back to school, you really start to feel like, you know, you have the park to yourself. There's much less people that come in the fall. Now, we do have the fall colors here with all the maples and everything. Mm-hmm. So there is a very busy kind of 2-week period where a lot of people come just for the day to see the fall colors. Even driving across the highway can be difficult with that because there's bumper-to-bumper traffic with the amount of people that come. But again, if you get into the backcountry, you lose a lot of those people. So coming in the fall and going on, you know, a couple of day canoe trips so that you get away from the highway, that's, you know, definitely worthwhile to do it. The park is open in the wintertime. A lot of people don't realize that. There is a little bit of a kind of a mud season where they close for a little while between the late fall and the winter, and the same thing in the spring just to make sure that it's safe. But once the lakes freeze over and everything, the park does open up. There is a campground in the park that's open all year long, including the wintertime, and they even have heated yurts and that, little canvas huts that are heated that you can go and stay at. And there's lots of snowshoeing trails and opportunities. You know, wildlife is probably the best to see in the wintertime because you see all their tracks. So it's pretty easy to find where they've been coming every day and just to hang out in that area to see them.
Do the lakes freeze over? The lakes are frozen over then. So
yeah.
Is there ice skating or would anybody do any of that? And you're talking to a southern boy down here. So
So again, because of safety reasons, there's mm-hmm. usually not ice skating on the lakes that are organized. There is an ice skating rink at the Mew Lake Campground, which is open in the wintertime. And you definitely can walk out on ice and stuff like that. A lot of people do that. You know, you want to be aware of, you know, safety for it. So where there's flowing water, so if there's water coming in where a river is, that might not be frozen over.
Right.
Or it may look like it's frozen over, but it's only an inch or so thick. So you want to make sure that you stay to where it's more safe than that. And usually the easiest thing for that is to stay on the land. And there's lots of hiking trails, right? So in the summertime, there's all these day hiking trails. They all turn into snowshoeing and ski trails in the wintertime.
Yes.
So there's lots of opportunities to experience it. The last season is the spring. And the spring is really for the hardy, diehard people. It can be a little colder. And as it warms up, we get our bug season. So we get black flies, little tiny flies that swarm and bite. So usually I recommend that if you've never came to Ontario in the spring and never experienced the black fly season, you probably want to book another season. I have a bug jacket that's all mesh that keeps the bugs off of me, and I wear that in the springtime myself. So it definitely is the one season that you have to take special caution and be aware of. Just to have a good experience with it.
Well, with the foundational sport of paddling, so we kind of covered that. Does the spring bug season that you just mentioned, which is famed there as that weather starting to warm up a little bit, is that when the fishing is the best as well?
It is.
How does that? That's where you know that God has humor.
Yes, most definitely.
So fishing is really good in the springtime before summer really gets fully in effect. And what are the fish? Everything from trout to smallmouth to what else is in there?
Yeah, trout, brookies, bass. Oh, yeah. We have quite a list of it. And, Algonquin, again, when you get into the more remote areas, they're usually where the best fishing is.
Yeah.
Because there's less people that are fishing it. If you're just off of Highway 60, off of a dock somewhere casting a line, a little bit less likely to hook into something big.
Randy, this is kind of like eating a meal. We start off with some appetizers, hit the entree, but now we're getting towards dessert as we talk about Algonquin Park with Randy Mitson, our friend there in Ontario, giving us the breakdown. So here comes dessert. Randy, talk to us about two things. One of is going back, you mentioned it, the wildlife, from the loons that are there to the moose to whatever wildlife that we may come in contact, get to see, get to hear, get to witness. And after that, we're going to talk about what many of us have here you don't have, light pollution. We can't see the stars like you can. Talk to us about those two things, wildlife and then the beautiful skies of Algonquin.
I have to hold back here because I love the beautiful night skies of Algonquin. So yes. I'm going to hold off on the final little bit of the dessert here.
Yeah.
Wildlife. So Algonquin Park is a wildlife sanctuary also. So there are no hunting in that allowed in the Algonquin Park. You have to be very respectful of wildlife and give them space. But we have, a vast majority of wildlife species that are in the park. They seem to realize that it's a safe spot for them. The big one that a lot of people like to see are the moose. If you've never seen a bull moose out of the water, you don't realize how massive of an animal it is. Some of them are super tall and super heavy. Coming the fall season, they just have, such a big rack. They're just a majestic animal. Quite often on a canoe trip, though, you'll encounter them in the water. So they're up to their bellies or even higher in the water, so you don't realize how tall they really are. I've seen moose swimming across lakes and that too. They definitely love being in the water because most of their food is located in the water. And quite often, if you're in a canoe, they kind of think you're a big duck. So, they quite often, if you're slow and you paddle parallel to them, like you're paddling past them, not at them, they won't even move. They'll just continue to munch away on the lilies and that. It's when you paddle straight at them that you tend to chase them away.
Wow.
If you stay your distance a little bit, you've got a little bit of a longer telephoto lens with you, or you've got a Pro Series iPhone with you, and you've got that telephoto lens, you can enjoy, watching a moose for quite a long time. I've sat in a canoe for an hour, easily watching a moose chew away on what it's eating. And then, of course, we have packs of wolves in Algonquin Park. Some of the most wolf research has been done in Algonquin. And it's pretty cool to see how they act as packs and how they interact together and everything. It's unlikely you'll see one, but it's quite common that you hear one in the park. And then, of course, we have bears and that too. We have black bears in Algonquin Park. So a male black bear is maybe about as big as the biggest dog that you've ever seen.
Yeah.
So they don't get big like the grizzly bears and stuff like that. And they tend to be respectable of humans as long as they don't get fed by us. So make sure you don't feed the wildlife because that'll encourage them to come. And that's usually when we run into problems with interactions between people and the wildlife, as somebody's been feeding them. And usually where you'll see the bears and you'll see signs up warning about bears are in the campgrounds along Highway 60, because somebody has not been respectful and they fed the bears, and then the bears just hang out there all the time. So, you know, you can see them in the backcountry, but quite often it's just kind of a fleeting moment in the backcountry. We have deers and otters and beavers and a ton of birds. If you love watching for birds and documenting all the different birds and that, there's just so many different species. So it is really a wildlife sanctuary for it. And, you know, if you're respectful and you're cautious around the animals and you don't approach too close or approach too quickly and you're quiet, you quite often will see something. The best advice that I have, if you want to see wildlife in Algonquin, is to go on a multi-day canoe trip.
Yes.
The more days you spend, the better chance you have of seeing something. If you're only here for a little bit, say just a day, what I would recommend is to come in the spring and drive Highway 60 and keep your eyes open, because the moose tend to come to the side of the highway in the spring to get salt. So it's pretty common to see them. They do look a little ratty because they're getting rid of their winter coat. So they look like they're losing their fur. Fall is the best time to take a picture of them. They look the best then. But if you want to have the best chance of seeing one, you know, you could easily just drive Highway 60 for a day and keep an eye out off the side of the road, and you're most likely to see one in the springtime.
And I will vouch for that night sky as well. With the wildlife, you can look up, and if you have multiple days to spend at Algonquin Park or that area, what a beautiful night sky. Randy Mitson, you are a champion. Thanks for jumping on here and sharing what you have in out your back door, Algonquin Park, and all the canoeing and recreation, wildlife, and more that are available there. Just type in Algonquin Park, and we'll have information in our liner notes of the Carolina Outdoors. Randy, thanks a bunch.
Thank you very much for having me again. It's been, how many years have we done this? It's been a few.
Yeah, great. Let's keep on doing it. It's our annual event, getting Randy on to talk about Algonquin. We're going to take a quick break, come back on the other side. You're listening to the Carolina Outdoors. We want to see you. How about at Jesse Brown's Outdoors Facebook page? Maybe Instagram. Both operate under the handle Jesse Brown CLT, and we want to see your hike, hunt, fish, climb, travel pics. We love to share and hope that you do too. Plus, giveaways, discounts, and celebrating our friends is a part of the charm. Again, Facebook and Instagram at Jesse Brown's CLT. Welcome aboard the Carolina Outdoors, however you're joining us, whether it's early on a Saturday morning via the airwaves of WBT Radio as we blast up and down the Eastern Seaboard, or maybe you're joining us via podcast. However you are, welcome. I'm Bill Barty, your host, and one of the missions here on the Carolina Outdoors is to talk about things to do in the Carolinas, whether it be an outdoor recreational pursuit, whether it be a special place that we have here is a gem in the Carolinas, and the people that are making those things happen. And today is no different. There's so many people in the Charlotte area that are sitting during rush hour on Interstate 77. But did you know about an area Mooresville farm that played a part in the building of I-77? Of course, this farm is now in its fifth generation of ownership, and it is now and has been a popular venue for fresh produce, wedding parties, and one of the best scenic swimming holes in the Carolinas. We're talking about Kerrigan Farms, and Doug Kerrigan joins us now on the Carolina Outdoors. Doug, welcome.
Thanks for having me, Bill.
It's always good getting you on here and getting to talk about Kerrigan Farms. And to us, it's an opportunity for people who maybe are new to the area or maybe just need to be reminded of what we have in this area. And, of course, Kerrigan Farms is like that. And over the course of the generations, I guess, Doug, and you'll help me go through this history, but really initially, I guess, tobacco and cotton was the main crop. And then dairy and row crops came about. But then in the mid-70s, Doug, you came out and brought on fruits and vegetables onto the farm. Tell us about how important produce is to Kerrigan Farms these days.
Well, we feed a lot of people out here. The average, there's only about 1% of the population that are farmers, and we happen to be that. But out of that 1%, about 20% of them do 80% of the production. So we feed a lot of people with the food we produce off this land. And so we're happy to do it. It's a way for us to live on the land and make a living and give fresh produce to people, good stuff. The stuff that we get, it's fresh. When you buy something in the grocery store, it's usually a week old when you get it, even though it's fresh, because they had to ride on a truck from somewhere and in the warehouse and so on and so forth. So we feed people just like we eat.
It's too good. I think that says somewhere on the website about California and, you know, the diversity of produce and things that come out of California. The same goes for Kerrigan Farms. It's just 3,000 miles closer.
Yeah, we're 3,000 miles fresher than a lot of stuff that comes from California. And that just makes it a whole lot different. It just tastes better. You know, we just picked some cucumbers this morning, and we were putting them into one of our cucumber cups, which is just has cucumbers, onions, the Vidalia onions that we grew right here. We put them up a little vinegar, a little sugar, a little salt, a little pepper, and a few little red pepper flakes in there. It's a staple on every southern grandma's house that you go into in the summer, but you can't buy it anywhere except right here. So we sell it at our farm, at our quarry, for people to enjoy it. It's clean. It's good. You need a bushel of it, never gain weight, you know?
Oh, I like the way you say that. Of course, I put a little ice cream on anything, including cucumbers, and I can gain weight like a champion. But, Doug, this program, the Carolina Outdoors, is a bit educational, and I mean this respectfully for many of the listeners of the Carolina Outdoors, but oftentimes people don't know where their food comes from. They think it does come from that grocery store. How has Kerrigan Farms changed, really, I guess, in agribusiness from being just a true producer, but now having many, many, many different types of people rolling through the farms? Is there an educational opportunity with Kerrigan Farms to the new visitors who maybe don't know where food is coming from, an educational opportunity for them to learn about that?
Well, in September and October, we do school tours and field trips. People take a ride, and we show them that food comes from the farm, not from Food Lion. And it starts out right here, and we produce all the good stuff that's there, but we teach kids about photosynthesis and honeybees and pollination and so on and so forth. This is what we're just part of nature. I'm just a caretaker for this generation, but we try to push the odds in our favor to take care of things. One thing that I figured out a while ago is that I'm in the food production business, and that takes it all the way from the planting the seeds to actually putting it on the fork so they can eat it. And so once we started doing that, we have a big kitchen that we produce a lot of food, and we feed a lot of people during the day, especially at our swimming, at our quarry, and we give them the fresh stuff right off the farm. But one thing that I noticed is that some people were, first of all, changing your eating habits is very hard to do for society because it's ingrained for a long time. But I've got a menu board. I've got a good and a good for you. And on the good, it's got hamburgers and hot dogs and french fries and pizza. And on the good for you, it's got a chicken sandwich. It's got a grilled Caesar salad. It's got a fruit cup, a cucumber cup, fresh corn on the cob, so on and so forth. And my goal, if I can shift 1% of the sales from the good side to the good for you side in the next 10 years, each year, I'll be tickled to death. A lot of people eat too much, and they're killing themselves one fork at a time. And so I try to put the good stuff on them that's good and good for them. And their health will be better. And it just tastes good when it comes right off the farm, too.
Man, we love getting Doug Kerrigan on the Carolina Outdoors, Doug, because you're telling it right. I'm going to ask you this. I'm going to scare you a little bit first because you are creeping up on 50 years getting out of NC State and heading back to the farm and working that magic that you work. Do you have a favorite produce to grow out there at Kerrigan Farms?
I like it all. I like something new and exciting, and I'm working on a few things like that right now. But strawberries probably one of my passion. I like growing them. I've been growing them ever since, right from the start. And I was actually president of the North American Strawberry Growers Association back in 86 or 8 or 8, something like that, a long time ago, 100 years ago. But I still know all the people in the business, and it's just, strawberries is a great crop.
My other question, and it may fall right into strawberries, but to see if there is a favorite one to grow and then a favorite one to sell, and that may have to do with that may be strawberries too. Is anything better than strawberries as far as selling as well?
It's all good. You know, my son just graduated from NC State, and he came back, and I said, dude, I said, you're not going to dip into my till. You got to bring something to the table here to plant and make another profit so you can have a salary. And so we sat down and devised a scheme. We had apples. When I was in school, we planted Red Delicious and Golden Delicious because at the time there was no fresh, hard, crunchy, juicy apples on the market because they didn't have all the controlled atmosphere storage and all the other good stuff that keeps apples fresh and crispy year-round. And the new varieties like Honeycrisp, they weren't around. So all of a sudden, we've got a lot of people that move down here from upstate New York and Massachusetts and all that, and they come in here and they want to pick apples in October. Well, our delicious are already over in September because we bloom earlier and we pick earlier. And so we planted some Evercrisp and some Gold Rush, which are two late October apples, which everybody says, I pick my apples in October back in New York. Well, you're in North Carolina. So we're going to grow some late apples that will have production. We just planted them this past spring, and we'll get a few apples off of them next year, probably about 10, 15 apples per tree. But we put in a couple thousand trees, and so we're going to shift the apple market. We have one in September and one in October. And so one could be for the old Southern, and one could be for the transplanted Southerners, you know?
Oh, that's talking about farm work right there. But, Doug, we need to switch gears a little bit because you mentioned the quarry. And, of course, the website has it on there, CarriganFarms.com. That's CARRIGAN, CarriganFarms.com. But, Doug, talk to us or describe to us, I guess, the quarry. For people who have not been on the site, have not been to Mooresville to Carrigan Farms, tell us about this big granite hole filled with water and what happens during the summer with the quarry.
Well, on this farm, there's been granite outcropping here for a long time. A man figured it out. I live in a house built in 1852, and actually some of the stones around the fireplace were quarried right off of the land right here and brought up to build part of my house. But in the late 60s, they took a half a million tons of stone out of this place to build a little highway called I-77. And when it did, it filled up with water, and we started irrigating all our crops. That was in, I guess, the early 70s. And we still take the water out of the quarry to grow the tomatoes that you eat on your hamburger. And so we use that water for a multitude of purposes. But the thing is that back in the 70s, early 70s, we'd come in and put the pig on the grill and the beer in the foot tub, invite all our rowdy friends and have a good time. Mm-hmm. And then in the late 80s, we said, well, if we mowed the grass and put on a clean shirt, maybe we could charge for the same thing. So here we are, and it's become quite popular. We put a rope swing in, and so it's basically just almost like a throwback to earlier times whenever you wanted to go out and just have fun. Jump in the lake, jump in the water, because it's all natural. It's spring-fed. Everybody says the water's real clear. Well, it's because it doesn't have all the red clay particles washed in like Norman and other stuff, because it's filtered, comes straight out of the ground. But it's fun. We get a lot of families out here, a lot of all different types of people. And during the pandemic, we were still open, and there was not much to do. And it was kind of like shooting fish in a barrel, because we were a captive market there. And then the word got out, and every day we have someone that's driven for probably over 4 hours just to come see the place and do it and have fun. And I think it's because of social media and other stuff. But anyway, people come out, they have a really good time. It's refreshing. And the first time people, I get some people right here from Mooresville. I get newcomers every day, and sometimes they come in and say, I never knew this place existed. And I say, well, you know what? We say the smart ones will find us, and the bad ones, we don't want them to, and you're finally coming around, you know?
Well, of course, I hang my hat through the week over at the local outfitter store here in Charlotte, Jesse Brown's Outdoors. And, Doug, you'll be on good authority that we have several groupings of people rolling through Jesse Brown's who say, hey, we just got back from Kerrigan Farms. And somewhere in there, it makes my heart smile to know that they've been at your farm, seeing all that you have there, but also enjoying that special Carolina swimming hole at Kerrigan Farms, the quarry.
Bill, we're just selling fun. And people come out here, and they have a good time, and they can still put their heads in their own pillow. You know?
Oh, it is magical.
Like taking a vacation, you know?
It is like that. I have that here on my list, too. I've got computers full of Kerrigan Farms, notes full of Kerrigan Farms, and one of these is how much of the Kerrigan Farm experience is escape, whether it's escaping the traffic of 77, the traffic of the city of Charlotte, a step back in remembering your childhood when you went down to the swimming hole. All of that, I think, is on my list for Kerrigan Farm, not just good food, good fruits, good produce, but also being able to escape just a little bit and enjoy.
We sell a lot of food, but we also sell a lot of memories.
Well, that's a good way to burn some calories, climbing out of that quarry and jumping back in. In fact, let me ask you, how tall is the tallest jump into the quarry?
Well, it's 15 feet or really 5 meters. And I tell all the kids that are out here, and they, first of all, a young kid will come up and they have to, the parents want them to do this, that, and I said, no, just leave them alone. They'll find out because you can jump off a 1 foot rock and a 2 foot and a 5 and 8 and 10 and a 15 foot. And the kids develop their own level of confidence by graduating up. And so you just leave them alone. They'll figure it out. And when they finally make it to the high jump, it's 15 feet, 5 meters. I tell them, look, next year the Olympics are coming up. There's going to be a 5 meter platform diving competition. And I said, and that's something that you've done. Except they'll do it with two flips and 1.5 twists in the process, you know. They make it look a little better than what we do.
They've been practicing more.
Yeah, but we, as a matter of fact, we get all types of people. We had a couple of people, a couple of girls, they actually went to college and had a diving scholarship in Michigan, and they came off our rope swing, and they were doing a double flip with a full twist or something. They were, they were really showboating it, but they could do it easily, you know.
Well, there's not many high dives around at area swimming pools, so we like to know that 15-foot or 5-meter high dive, if you will, the tallest jump in the quarry, is still alive and well. And, Doug, I need to ask you this, too, because all of this happens, but this is also a wonderful event venue, whether it be a wedding or rehearsals. Or tell us some of the events that are going on that are – maybe not farm or recreation-based, but you're hosting a little bit by putting on that shirt and mowing the grass a little bit. Tell us some of the events happening.
Bill, we have to eat all year round, and so we make enough in about 9 months to try to get through the winter. Like that old squirrel, we make it up, stick those nuts back in the nest so we can reach back and grab one out of every now and then in the winter. But so we start in the early spring with strawberries, and then we move on into asparagus and vegetables, and by the end of May, when strawberry season's over, our quarry opens up. It's warm enough for swimming, so people come swimming. We market a lot of our produce through that, and then once it gets into late September, it's kind of too cold to swim again, and so we do a lot of weddings and a lot of company picnics, too. I could name a bunch of them, but no need to right now, but the people come in, and matter of fact, at our quarry there, we've got a spot to get married on the, we call it a sandy area there. And we can see a couple hundred people there very easily. And so the preacher says, I now pronounce you man and wife. And now we have the joining of this man and this woman, like two streams of water coming together forever inseparable. And we hit the button and I got a waterfall that comes on the man, two of them, one out of left, one at right. And it's a waterfall. And I tell you what, I can make the hair on a woman's arm stand up, and not every man can do that. But it's just the women get so excited when they see that waterfall at a wedding, and they think it's really neat. So the weddings are a lot of fun. It's fun watching people have fun.
Yes.
If I was the baggage claim guy at US Air for lost baggage, boy, it'd be complaints all day long, you know. But here, it's fun watching people have fun. But do a lot of I don't know. The other day we had, one of the cheer teams here. We had about 75 or 80 cheer teams came out and went swimming, had a good time. You know, and we had also had a bunch of Marines out of Charlotte, which that was a good deal. It was one of them 100 years back, too. So
Oh, wow. Well, it's not just the recreation business at Kerrigan Farms. It's a whole lot of other things, but you heard it from Doug Kerrigan. He is selling fun. They are selling fun at Kerrigan Farms. Doug, it's always fun to get you on the Carolina Outdoors to find out what's happening. Thank you for running through the entire year, really, the events. And it won't be too long, you know, that the haunted trails and the pumpkin patch and all that will be happening. And then Christmas parties for the holiday. So, listen, thanks for always thanks for your time here on
Bill,
the Carolina Outdoors.
Keep tuning in because my son's got a couple ideas up his sleeve, and we're working on them now, but we're 3 or 4 years away from, I call, turning them loose to the general public here. But it's going to put us on the map even further because we're going to be one of the largest in the world at what we do at that point in time. So it'll be quite interesting, but I'll leave that for another day.
Oh, that'll be another tease for another visit on the Carolina Outdoors. Doug, thanks much. Have a great one. For all of our listeners out there, KerriganFarms.com is the place to go check it out. Check out the Open Swim. Check out the website. Check out where to be and how to be at Kerrigan Farms, a gem of the Carolinas. Off he goes, and off I go. But just for a moment, we're going to come back on the other side. You're listening to the Carolina Outdoors. One of the best times of year in one of the best places, summertime in the Carolinas. It means hiking, travel, blue skies, and fly fishing with Jesse Browns. But it also means warm weather and sun. Jesse Browns has clothing to sun protect and make you feel and look cooler. That's right, the modern fabrics within the Jesse Browns clothing keeps the UVA and UVB rays away, but it also has a cooling sensation during these warm Carolina months. Stop by jessebrowns.com to check it out, and also visit the brick and mortar in the shopping district of Charlotte's South Park area to get your new summer apparel from Jesse Browns. Hey, we got to wrap this thing up called the Carolina Outdoors. We're glad that you all tuned in, and if you're just tuning in, your host right here, Bill Bartee. We talked to Doug Kerrigan from Kerrigan Farms about that special place just north of Charlotte here in the Carolinas for you to get some fresh produce, also blow off some steam, jump in the quarry 15 feet or less. They have the rope swing out there as well. Restaurant is available, weddings, corporate venues, all of that. Special thanks to Doug Kerrigan from Kerrigan Farms. Check him out at KerriganFarms.com. Also, Randy Mitson jumped on. Algonquin Park, what a special place in Ontario, Canada, of all places, to get out there and enjoy a little bit of canoeing, a little bit of camping, a little bit of everything, fishing, wildlife viewing, all on hand at Algonquin Park. Randy Mitson gave us the lowdown. For all of this, if you want to learn more, check us out at jessebrowns.com. That's what helps power the Carolina Outdoors. That's where I hang my hat through the week. The brick and mortar store located in the heart of Charlotte's shopping district, the South Park shopping district in Charlotte. Visit us over there 10 a.m. till 6. That's Monday through Saturday, noon to 5 on Sunday. And as always, at jessebrowns.com, where if you miss this entire show as you're waking up early to WBT, head over there. Highlights of the Carolina Outdoors. You can hear the previous segments we just talked about and the segments from before. We are over 60,000 listeners to the Carolina Outdoors and are glad that you are one of them. Another place to land where you can find out what is going on as far as events and things happening is the Jesse Browns Facebook page and Instagram. All the fly fishing that we speak of, you can see the fish that are caught, the outfitting and reel rigging that all happens at Jesse Browns. So join in Instagram, Jesse Browns CLT, and Facebook as well, Jesse Browns CLT. That's where a lot is happening. And as speaking of events, we do have it on the calendar. September 21st. Is the next batch of Storytellers Night at Jesse Browns. Come hear your neighbor's adventure with 3 20-minute stories. These are people that have an adventure, a life experience, something that they are going to share with the community by standing up on the Storyteller stage at Jesse Browns. So check that out. Also, we're going to have a Women on the Fly event September 28th. So if you're a lady and interested in the sport of fly fishing, come on over September 28th. Again, that's going to start at 5:30. We'll end up about 7:30. We'll have drinks and snacks and a lot of information, not only about places to go in the Carolinas to fly fish, not only about demystifying the equipment that it takes to fly fish, but you'll also meet a whole bunch of nice people who are involved in the sport. That is Women on the Fly, Wine, Women, and Waders at Jesse Brown, September 28th. Thanks for everybody for joining us. For Randy Mitson from Algonquin Park and Doug Kerrigan from Kerrigan Farm. For TJ the DJ, I'm Bill Barty saying make the Carolina outdoors a little better than you found it and pick up your trash.
Whether it's audiobooks or all-time greatest hits, long live listening to your favorites. Learn more about Kisqali Ribociclib 200 milligrams at KISQALI.com and talk to your doctor to see if Kisqali is right for you.